I have learned that disappearances rarely announce themselves with panic, because most begin inside arrangements that have worked before, or at least appeared stable enough to repeat, such as a public meeting arranged in advance, involving a child who expects to go home with one parent and then the other, following a routine that does not usually raise concern. When that rhythm breaks, it does not always register immediately, because delay often disguises itself as inconvenience rather than danger, allowing time to pass before urgency takes shape. By the time law enforcement is notified, silence has already expanded, stretching beyond a missed call or an unanswered message, and settling into something harder to define. What remains for investigators is not a single moment, but a sequence of movements, decisions, and locations that must be reconstructed without emotion or assumption. Because one of those steps explains why a woman never left a place she fully intended to walk away from. By the time we understood what we were tracing, her name had already crossed state lines. The woman was Cassie Carley. I first encountered Cassie Carley as a name attached to a missing person report, which is how most investigations begin, with a document that reduces a living person to basic identifiers and a narrow timeline. Cassie was 37 years old, lived in Florida, and was the mother of a young child, facts that were quickly verified and did little on their own to explain why she had failed to return home. As with all disappearances, the first task was not to assume harm, but to understand routine, because routine tells us what normally happens, and therefore what has gone wrong. Cassie worked consistently and maintained regular contact with her family, which immediately distinguished her case from situations involving instability or voluntary absence. Her employment history showed reliability, her housing situation was stable, and there were no indications that she was disengaging from her responsibilities. Family members described daily communication patterns that did not include long gaps or unexplained absences, and phone records supported that description, showing ordinary usage leading up to the day she vanished. Central to Cassie's routine was a custody arrangement with her former partner, Christian Obunzeli, with whom she shared a child. The exchange scheduled for the day she disappeared was not unusual, nor was the location chosen for it, which was a public place used previously for the same purpose. That context mattered because it established that Cassie was not needing someone unfamiliar or entering an unknown environment, but instead following a pattern that had occurred before without incident. On the day of the exchange, Cassie left her residence with items intended for her child, which were later found inside her vehicle, reinforcing the conclusion that she expected the meeting to conclude normally. There were no indications that she was preparing to leave town, no packed belongings beyond what was required for a custody handoff, and no communication suggesting fear or hesitation about attending the exchange. When Cassie failed to return or respond to calls, concern developed gradually rather than immediately, which is common in cases involving shared parenting arrangements. Family members initially assumed a delay, then attempted contact, and only escalated the situation once it became clear that normal explanations no longer applied. By the time law enforcement was contacted, Cassie had been unaccounted for long enough to warrant immediate action. Cassie's vehicle was located at the exchange site, parked and secured, with her purse inside, and no sign of forced entry or struggle visible at the scene. The absence of her phone was noted, as was the absence of Cassie herself, which immediately narrowed the investigative focus to events occurring after her arrival. A missing vehicle can indicate flight or accident, but a vehicle left behind points instead to interruption. Surveillance footage from surrounding businesses was reviewed to establish a timeline, confirming Cassie's arrival at the location and showing her former partner arriving separately. The footage did not show Cassie leaving on her own, entering another vehicle independently, or departing the area, which contradicted later statements suggesting the exchange had concluded normally. At this stage, the case remained officially a missing person investigation, but the evidence already limited the range of plausible explanations. Cassie had arrived, she had met the individual she was scheduled to meet, and she had not been seen leaving alone, all of which required careful documentation rather than speculation. When Christian Obunzeli was contacted by investigators, he confirmed that he had met Cassie, but stated that she left afterward, a claim that did not align with surveillance evidence. The discrepancy was documented without interpretation, as inconsistencies alone are not conclusions, but indicators that require further corroboration. Cell phone data soon became critical, showing Christian's phone traveling north after the meeting, eventually crossing state lines into Alabama, while Cassie's phone ceased transmitting shortly after the exchange time. The timing and direction of that movement shifted the investigation from local to multi-state coordination, as Cassie's last known location and Christian's subsequent travel path no longer occupied the same jurisdiction. By the end of the first day, investigators were no longer asking whether Cassie might return on her own, because the evidence increasingly suggested that her disappearance was not voluntary. What remained was determining exactly what occurred during the narrow window after she arrived for a meeting she had no reason to believe would end any differently than before. Once surveillance footage established the limits of Cassie Carley's movements, the investigation narrowed to a specific sequence of events tied to a specific location and time. This is where missing person cases either expand into uncertainty or contract into focus. And in Cassie's case, the evidence continued to compress rather than widen. Traffic data, license plate readers, and phone location records confirmed that Christian Abumseli left the exchange area shortly after meeting Cassie and traveled north into Alabama, a route inconsistent with a routine return trip following a completed custody exchange. That movement occurred during the same window in which Cassie stopped responding and her phone went offline, creating a convergence of timelines that demanded closer examination. Christian was interviewed again, and while his statements acknowledged travel, his explanations for Cassie's absence remained unsupported by evidence. Each version of events was recorded, compared against physical and digital records, and preserved as part of the case file, because inconsistencies gain meaning only when measured against verified data. Search warrants were obtained for locations connected to Christian in Alabama, including a rural property associated with his family. The decision to search was procedural rather than assumptive, based on travel data and timing rather than inference. Law enforcement agencies coordinated across state lines, ensuring that evidence collection followed proper jurisdictional protocols. During the search of the Alabama property, Cassie Carley's body was discovered buried in a shallow grave. The location and condition of the burial established that Cassie had not traveled there independently, and that concealment had occurred after her death, transforming the investigation definitively into a homicide case. Forensic examination documented the scene, the burial method, and later the cause of death, all of which became part of the evidentiary record. The findings confirmed that Cassie had been killed and transported after the exchange, reinforcing conclusions already suggested by surveillance and digital evidence. Christian Abumseli was taken into custody and formally charged with murder and related offenses. From that point forward, the investigation shifted toward preparing the case for legal proceedings, which required ensuring that each element was supported independently and could withstand scrutiny. Digital forensic analysis confirmed proximity between Cassie and Christian at the exchange location and supported the timeline of his movements afterward. No evidence emerged suggesting third-party involvement at the meeting site, further narrowing responsibility. Throughout this phase, investigators avoided narrative framing beyond what the evidence allowed, focusing instead on assembling a complete, quiet, and well-documented sequence of events that explained Cassie's disappearance without reliance on speculation or emotional appeal. The legal process moved forward based on the evidence collected, with Christian Abumseli facing charges that reflected the documented findings rather than inferred motives. Pre-trial proceedings addressed evidentiary matters, including authentication of surveillance footage, digital records, and forensic conclusions, all of which were reviewed according to established legal standards. Cassie Carley's family remained involved as the case progressed, providing background information that confirmed her stability, her commitment to her child, and the absence of any indication that she intended to disappear. Their statements aligned with the evidence already documented and did not introduce contradictions. Before the case could proceed to trial, Christian Abumseli died by suicide while in custody, an outcome that ended the possibility of a courtroom resolution. There was no verdict and no cross-examination, but the investigative record remained intact, supported by physical, digital, and forensic evidence. From an investigative standpoint, the case had already reached factual closure, even though the legal process concluded prematurely. Cassie's death was ruled a homicide, the responsible party had been identified through evidence, and the sequence of events had been documented thoroughly. Custody matters involving Cassie's child were addressed separately through family court, focusing on stability and safety rather than criminal accountability. Those proceedings were distinct from the homicide investigation and followed their own legal framework. When a case ends without trial, there is often a public sense of incompleteness, but investigators do not fill that space with interpretation. Our role is limited to establishing what happened, how it happened, and what the evidence supports, not assigning meaning beyond those boundaries. Cassie Carley went to a scheduled custody exchange and did not return. Her former partner traveled across state lines afterward, and her body was found where his documented path ended. Those facts remain fixed, independent of how the legal process concluded, and they define the case as it stands.